We're talking about unions and collective bargaining here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. On Tuesday, Harley-Davidson and two chapters of the United Steelworkers came to the temporary agreement to extend the expired union contract through April 14th while their negotiations are underway. Are you a union member? Do you think right-to-work law in Wisconsin has affected your union? Or are there things more or less the same as they were before? Have you opted out of union membership? Why? Be part of this conversation at 800-642-1234. John Shelton is an associate professor of democracy and justice studies at UW Green Bay. He studies unions, labor, and education. He's author of Teacher Strike, Public Education and the Making of a New American Political Order. John, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thanks so much for having me. Good morning, Kate, and good morning to your listeners. It's so great to be with you today.
Well, let's start with the Harley news. First of all, United Steelworkers rejected the five-year deal that Harley offered. Can you explain that for us, the back and forth there, the background of this negotiation?
Yeah, so as you said, the workers for at the Harley plant, who are both at both plants, are members of the United Steelworkers, rejected the contract offer. Now, that's not anything that's kind of outside of the ordinary for labor negotiations, of course. Workers and their employers have been disagreeing since the advent of capitalism in the 19th century in the U.S. But, you know, what's really interesting to me in watching, you know, in being an observer of it, is that the breakdown in negotiations weren't directly about, you know, wages and benefits, right? For the most part, it seems like the workers didn't have a problem with that. What they seem to be concerned about is a contract that would kind of further really a two-tiered sort of workforce that might include more temp workers, and that might allow those temp workers to stay on the job potentially during slack times when permanent workers might be laid off. So, you know, what's really interesting to me about that is that it seems to speak to this really kind of broader political and economic discussion we're having in the United States about the connection between jobs and economic security.
So it wasn't so much about the money being offered on the table or what that pension looked like. It was more about what is the job security? What does the scheduling look like? What would the schedules look like for temporary workers?
Yeah, and I think from my observations of it, it seems like the workers in the union there are worried about a situation where more of the workers would be temp workers, right? And that could, you know, undercut the kind of long-term security that the permanent workers had on the job, right? And it leads to an interesting question, which is, you know, I was listening in on, you know, the sort of news rundown. We have these like historically low unemployment numbers, but why don't more workers feel, you know, secure in their economic livelihood, right? I mean, you could imagine that if working people at Harley felt like they had a really kind of secure long-term outlook, then, you know, they might not be as worried about, you know, more temp workers coming on and effectively kind of taking more of the work that they would have already been doing.
So what happens next in these negotiations? We know that the contract has been, current contract is extended until April 14th.
It looks like they're going to continue to negotiate. Certainly with any labor negotiations, you can never rule out the possibility of a strike. I'm a historian, so I don't make predictions. So I have, you know, no idea what's going to happen. We'll just have to kind of wait and see. But I think the workers, I think, have sent a pretty clear message that, you know, they want an investment in their kind of long-term economic security. And so we'll see what happens there.
We're talking with John Shelton. He's an associate professor of democracy and justice studies at UW Green Bay. You can join in with this conversation, 800-642-1234. Do you think unions have a secure future in Wisconsin? Why or why not? Do you agree with Governor Evers' proposal to roll back right to work in Wisconsin? Why or why not? Let's know what's on your mind at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Well, John, let's take this conversation about Harley and United Steelworkers a little bit broader.
Sure.
What does it tell us about the place of private sector unions in Wisconsin?
Yeah, so I mean, as has been the case across the country, for a variety of reasons, since the kind of high watermark of you know, private sector unionization, which a lot of your listeners might think is maybe in the 1960s or 1970s. It's actually in the early 1950s. So certainly more workers join unions over the course of the second half of the 20th century. But as a percentage of the total private sector workforce, fewer and fewer workers were represented by work by unions as the 20th century went on. And so now we're in a situation where, you know, this may be kind of surprising to some of your listeners, but in the private sector in this country, only about 6.5% of workers are actually represented by a collectively bargained contract. You know, in the 1950s, that was, you know, that number might have been like, or was, you know, 35%. In Wisconsin, the number's a bit higher. There's been a decline in the past few years, not a substantial decline, but you know, certainly the right to work law that was passed in, what was that, 2015, I think, has had at least a marginal impact, I think.
Well, do you see parallels between the Harley-Davidson negotiation and the conflicts that we just saw at Kohler a few years ago?
Yeah, of course. I mean, you know, so Kohler, which that strike was also in 2015, I believe, you know, it was a similar kind of conflict, actually. So in Kohler, I mean, a little different. Kohler had negotiated after the economic crisis in 2008. The workers there had negotiated effectively a two-tiered labor structure. So there would be Tier A workers, who are people who are already working there, long-term employees, and then tier, basically everybody hired after that agreement was reached would be brought in a second tier. So lower wages, diminished benefits. And the strike that happened in 2015 that I'm betting a lot of your listeners remember was really a conflict over doing something for those Tier B workers to bring everybody up to the same level. Now, I think the union there really saw that strike as being successful. They weren't able to achieve total parity, but they were able to really improve substantially the wages and conditions for the Tier B workers. So it is interesting, particularly when you put this in the context of some of the, and we don't have to go this road if you don't want to, but you know, in the context of some of the public sector labor conflict that we've seen in the past couple of years, that I think you're seeing a lot of unions now who are really kind of broadening their demands in contract negotiations beyond just, you know, the immediate wages and working conditions, and to more equity at the workplace and, you know, more long-term sort of job security. And certainly the teachers who are going on strike in this country are also thinking about the very state of public education. So I think there's been these examples are showing that, you know, there's very much an open question about the future of labor and economic security in the U.S.
We're talking about unions and collective bargaining on The Morning Show. John Shelton is an associate professor of democracy and justice studies at UW Green Bay, studying unions and labor. We're gathering your thoughts and questions along the way at 800-642-1234. What do you think about Governor Evers wanting to bring back prevailing wage protections? Do you worry that could harm the economy, especially construction, or do you think it would be good for workers? You can call in, email ideas at WPR.org. We'll get back in just a minute on this conversation about unions and collective bargaining right here on the Ideas Network. It's a conversation about labor unions and right to work on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Governor Tony Evers' budget is proposing a repeal of the right to work law and restoring the prevailing wage law for state and local public works projects. Here is Governor Evers addressing the Wisconsin AFL-CIO Building Trades Conference last month.
We're going to begin to undo the harm that has been done to organized labor.
Are you a union member? Do you think right-to-work law in Wisconsin has affected your union, or are things more or less the same as they were before? There is a line for your story at 800-642-1234. John Shelton is our guide. He's an associate professor of democracy and justice studies at UW-Green Bay, where he studies unions. Let's go to the phones now with Sarah joining us from Green Bay. Good morning, Sarah.
Good morning. I was just calling. I love hearing John on the air, and I have actually been a huge proponent of teachers' unions, and I am a teacher that's a part of a union. But the struggle that I've been having this year is that I've been bringing to light a lot of inequitable practices and policies in my district, and I have felt a severe lack of support from my union representatives in terms of changing those policies and practices. And I was just wondering if John had any advice as to how to navigate those issues.
Can you be a little bit more specific about some of these inequities that you're seeing?
Sure. Just in terms of, for example, wanting to lead a group at my school to talk about how to be better anti-racist white educators, and having people complain to their representatives about the fact that I'm running those things, and then representatives basically not really encouraging me to continue those conversations, and actually in some instances telling me to cease communication altogether about certain policies that I've addressed with our school board.
John, what do you make of what Sarah's saying there?
Wow, Sarah, that's a great question and a tough question this early in the morning. So thanks for the question. What I would say is, you know, when unions are at their best, they're democratic. I can't speak to your union specifically, but, you know, I do know that not every union's perfect. And, you know, I would encourage you to find others in the union that can be your allies, other people at your workplace. It can take time to change a union that you feel like isn't responsive to the things that you want to see happen. So there's probably a much longer answer there, but I think the shorter answer there is don't stop trying. Look for other allies, you know, unions have elections, and so you can always challenge leadership at the ballot box if it comes to that.
Sarah, thanks for the call. John, going back to 2015, can you remind us what the right to work law does and its impact on unions' power?
Sure. Yeah, that's a great question. So there's a lot of misconceptions about what right to work laws do. Basically, so we have a federal law called the National Labor Relations Act that was passed in the 1930s, and there was a revision to that law in the late 1940s, 1947 actually, that allowed individual states to pass what were called right-to-work laws. And it doesn't give anybody the right to a job. It's kind of a misnomer. What a right-to-work law does is it ensures that a working person who is at a workplace, now this is only in the private sector, I should remind your listeners, who is covered by a collectively bargained contract, cannot be obligated to contribute to the representation costs of the union. So I should also remind your listeners that there's another part of the National Labor Relations Act that obligates unions to represent every single person at the workplace, right? And every union in this country that has a collectively bargained contract has been voted into office. Has been voted to represent the workers. To Sarah's question about unions, I would just remind everybody that every union has democratic elections for their leadership and to represent workers. But they also, once that happens, at least in the private sector and in most states too, in the public sector, they have the duty to represent every worker at the workplace. And so many unions in the past have negotiated in states where it's allowed contracts where those who benefit from the contract also pay what are called agency fees, or sometimes called in the public sector, sometimes called fair share fees, or at least that's what was the case before the Janus decision. And so the idea being that they should, everybody who benefits from the contract should contribute to it. And so what right to work laws do is allow a state to say, we're not going to allow those kinds of contracts to exist. And so, unions sometimes call this the free rider problem, that people can, in those states, benefit from the contract and not have to pay any representation costs.
Are there unions that are more vulnerable when it comes to right to work law?
That's a good question. I don't think there's necessarily any particular sector where workers are, where unions are more vulnerable. But I think the unions that, so of course, you know, about 25 states have right to work laws. And as probably some of your listeners know, but I should just explain briefly what the Supreme Court case did back last summer, the Janus versus AFSCME case, is it effectively made every public sector workplace in this country right to work. You know, we're still looking to see kind of what the impact of that would be. But probably the workplaces that are more sort of vulnerable to right to work laws are those in which you don't have an extremely active union membership, because when workers really see the value of a union, and when you have unions that are, you know, truly kind of representing the union leadership, that are truly representing the workers at the workplace, and those workers feel like they have a voice and that they're being represented, well, just about everybody at that workplace is going to see the value in the union, right? A few people will still not pay representation costs for whatever reason, but most people are going to continue to want the union, because the union, for most people, I mean, there's a significant wage premium. We know that in public education, for example, teachers who have strong unions feel like they really have a voice in their workplace, and that leads them to be more happy with their jobs and actually do a better job. So when unions are democratic, I guess what I'm saying, and they truly kind of represent the workers who work there, and those people are extremely active, you know, those unions have not been too affected by right-to-work laws, at least so far.
Governor Evers has proposed repealing the state's right-to-work law. Do you think that there is any chance of that actually happening with a Republican-controlled legislature?
You know, I don't. You know, certainly the turn that the Republican Party has made, and I'm saying nationally now, you know, in the past couple of decades, is a much more conservative turn. You know, there used to be Republicans in the United States who strongly supported unions. For example, I'll just give your listeners one example from Michigan. Everybody probably knows Mitt Romney. Well, Mitt Romney's dad was a Republican, obviously, in the state of Michigan, and he actually signed into law the law that gave teachers and other public employees the right to have a union, the right to collective bargaining, back in the 1960s. But the Republican Party has shifted pretty far from that. You don't find a lot of Republicans who support very strong union rights. But what I will say that's interesting is, I do think that it's interesting that Governor Evers didn't propose repealing Act 10. And I think maybe the reason for that is because repealing the right to work law, for at least some Republicans, is probably more palatable than Act 10. And the reason I say that is because, you know, even Governor Walker, he actually, it's been documented that, you know, he promised, he had several, you know, unions that supported him in 2010 and 2014, and he actually promised that he wasn't going to pass a right to work law, that he would not sign it. And then, you know, of course, he reneged on that promise. But the point is that I do think it's more likely that Republicans in the state would entertain the idea of repealing the right to work law, because, you know, particularly with some unions in construction, I think some Republicans and some business owners actually really see the value in what unions do, training workers, making sure that they're equipped to follow safety guidelines and those kinds of things. So I think it's more likely, I think it's more likely that Republicans would support that than repealing Act 10, but not very likely.
And Governor Evers has also said he'd like to bring back the prevailing wage in Wisconsin. Help us understand what prevailing wage is.
Sure. So prevailing wage laws have a long history in the United States. There's a federal version called the Davis-Bacon Act that is still in the books, and that ensures that government projects with federal funding follow the prevailing wage. And there's also has been a series of state laws going back to the early 20th century. And the idea is that the government can use its sort of power to make sure that it doesn't diminish the wages of other workers. So a prevailing wage basically says that the government is not going to pay any any workers who are involved in its contracts less than what the sort of average wage is in a particular place. So in Wisconsin, I think the prevailing wage law that existed said that government contracts couldn't pay workers in a county less than what the sort of average wage was for workers in that county. And so the idea is that, you know, rather than using competition to bring everyone's wages down in a race to the bottom, the government has an obligation to support good wages for workers.
John, thank you for joining us.
It's been a real pleasure, Kate. Thank you.
John Shelton is an associate professor of democracy and justice studies at UW Green Bay, where he studies unions, labor, and education, author of the book Teacher Strike, Public Education, and the Making of a New American Political Order. Coming up, we talk with the Wisconsin Department of Veterans Affairs Secretary about the priorities for her agency. That's after a news update. Stay with us on the Ideas Network.
International News.